tenant issue. This is a housing.
Welcome, everyone. Today is Wednesday, May 3rd. This is the Senate Committee on Environment and Natural Resources. If you're not supposed to be here, you got to be next door, maybe, possibly. I'd like to open quickly, if we can, HCR 8 and call up Rep. Rocksmith and Rep. Gomberg. If you would, gentlemen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For your record, I'm David Gomberg from House District 8 on the Central Oregon coast. Very pleased to be here today on House Concurrent Resolution 8 to celebrate the 50th anniversary of the Oregon Beach Bill. And I won't take a lot of time to review some of the details in the memorial, except to say that we take our beaches sometimes for granted. That hasn't always been the case here in Oregon. It was 50 years ago that our bodies, made the affirmative decision to ensure that the beaches belong to the public and are accessible to the public, whether they're Oregonians or people that are visiting Oregon. And it's a treasure worth visiting, worth relishing, and certainly worth celebrating, particularly on this 50th anniversary. And that's what this measure is all about.
Thank you.
I just want to not take very much time as well. This bill just does commemorate the great work that was done 50 years ago this year. And my name is David Brock Smith, a state representative of House District 1, which on the coast is Charleston to the California border. The Coastal Caucus is supportive of this bill, and it really will just enshrine all the great work by our good governor, Tom McCall, so many years ago, as well as move forward with some positive economic development on our coast. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Are there any questions?
Mr. Chairman, if I could just add very briefly. We're here to celebrate the 50th anniversary of the Beach Bill. Not everyone agrees that this is the 50th anniversary. In fact, there was some discussion in a book recently published by former Representative Paul Hanneman, who argued, in fact, that the Beach Bill finally passed in 1969 rather than 1967. I mention that because Representative Hanneman, who served in this body for more than 20 years, passed away last night, and the Beach Bill is part of his legacy, as it is all of ours.
Good. Thank you for that. No questions?
We'll celebrate it again in 2 years.
Absolutely. Okay, I'm going to put HCR 8 in a recess.
Thank you.
And we will open up House Bill 2143A and call up Representative Johnson. Or would you like to do 2748?
Yes, please.
Okay, we'll change that. I will open a public hearing on House Bill 2748A, call up Rep. Johnson and Rep. Kenny Geyer. Ladies first, please.
Okay, thank you so much, Mr. Presiding Chair and Senators. I'm Alyssa Kenny Geyer from House District 46, parts of Southeast and Northeast Portland. Thank you for letting me go quickly because we're voting on some bills in the Healthcare Committee. I just want to say it's been a great honor to work with Representative Johnson on this bill. It's a very important bill, setting up a fund within DEQ. Actually, the fund is already there, but expanding the fund to get on top of the issue of old wood burning stoves that are spewing a lot of smoke into the atmosphere and which are a part of the problem of some communities falling into non-attainment. I am a public health person, so I also come at it from the health risks that are in those communities. So I very much support this bill. There's a companion bill, House Bill 2725, that would actually seek to some money from Ways and Means to start to put money in the fund because there's no money there. So I hope that happens too. I am very comfortable with the amendment that Senator Brzezinski has presented that creates more flexibility. I do want to say that I, along with Representative Johnson, do think that having rebates as a part of that program is important. And I would also say that in addition to the non-attainment issue, when eventually funds get put into this fund and then get distributed, I hope that the poverty status of communities is something that is taken into consideration as well. I just wanted to put those comments on the record.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. You're doing a fine job. For the record, Mark Johnson, House District 52. Thanks so much for hearing this bill. This is my second session working on this issue. In the previous session, we passed a bill that led to a work group that DEQ put together. And I was really glad to work with DEQ on putting the work group together because I wanted to make sure that as we talk about issues like wood stove smoke, that folks that live in rural areas of Oregon had a prime opportunity to make contributions to the work group itself. So it was, in fact, a very broad-based and diverse group that I think was really well represented across the state of Oregon. That group came back, that interim group came back with some recommendations that made its way into the bill that you have in front of you. But specifically, it talked about recommending funding for local communities to implement wood stove smoke reduction programs, sustained funding for wood stove changeout programs with special consideration giving to the serious non-attainment areas or risk areas, increase education and outreach, and enhance coordination among state agencies to focus on air quality. And of course, the reason we're doing this is really twofold. Wood stove smoke has a negative health consequence. There's no question about that. But economically, higher concentrations of wood stove smoke can put industrial development in jeopardy. And right now the state of Oregon actually has two non-attainment areas, one of those in Klamath Falls, another one in around the community of Oak Ridge that I know Senator Pozanski is familiar with. But we also have some areas that are on the bubble, if you will, that could slip into non-attainment. And Washington County, and specifically the area of Hillsborough, is one of those areas as well. So this is in everybody's best interest to be proactive about this, trying to do what we can do to address the particulate matter that comes from wood stove smoke. So the bill you have in front of you builds on the efforts that already were in place or statutorily where there already has been a fund. It's called the Solid Fuel Heating Air Quality Improvement Fund, that Residential Solid Fuel Heating Improvement Fund that DEQ has. This simply makes the fund now able to receive financial contributions from any source, public or private. And that's important for the purpose of reducing the emission of air contaminants. Washington County and some of the large employers in Washington County have already contributed to this in the past, and I believe they'll continue to do so because, again, it's in their financial interest to, you know, invest a little money now so that they can continue to expand and create more jobs in that area. But the bill also gives the department a direction on how they shall prioritize the grants. And first of all, non-attainment areas that do not attain compliance with the standards of particulate matter under the EPA will be number one in terms of where the emphasis is. Number two will be areas of the state that are in danger of slipping into non-compliance. Now, we also heard from some communities, I go back to Oak Ridge and into Lane County, where we have some communities that prefer a little more, local-driven process here. You have some communities like Oak Ridge where, I mean, they're so familiar with one another, they literally can go door to door and talk to folks about what they're burning and what they're not burning, and yes, you might be polluting a little bit more on this day. And they would like a little more discretion in how any sort of grants that EPA might administer could be used and so forth. So that's where, the amendments that we have that Senator Pozanski requested, and I think they're great amendments, simply adds a chapter of Section 6 in here. It says the department shall use monies available in subsection of this to establish a program designed to by providing grants, loans, rebates, other subsidies to make dry wood or other fuel available. So it's not just simply about changing out wood stoves. In some circumstances, it can just be providing a more cleaner burning fuel for some of these folks in some of these more isolated and rural areas. So I think this is a great step. I know DEQ is fully supportive of what we're trying to do. So with that, I would answer any questions you might have. I do think we got to where we need to go. Now, as the good representative said, there is a fiscal bill down in Ways and Means that would actually ask for some general fund to support this work as well. We wanted to separate this from that, and in this budget season, it's, you know, to separate that. So there's an opportunity to get the policy implemented. We have a fund now that I think our private sector folks can feel confident about putting investments in, and it's actually going to get the return on investment that they're looking for. So with that, I'll quit, and I can move into my other bill whenever you'd like me to do that.
Are there any questions on this one? Okay, we're going to recess House Bill 2748A, and I'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2143A.
Thank you again, Mr. Vice Chair, and for the record again, Mark Johnson, House District 52. This is about outdoor recreation. I think most of you know that this is a huge growing economic driver within the state of Oregon. And I was someone who was really pleased to be able to grow up in an area that really is, I think, symbolic of outdoor recreation, growing up at the foot of Mount Hood on the north side of the top of the Hooter Valley. where we grew up doing any one of a number of outdoor activities, from hunting, fishing, hiking, skiing, boating, water skiing on the Columbia on some of those rare and occasionally calm summer days. That's things that we just routinely did. And over the years, I've been able to watch our community in Hood River change and transform again because of recreational activities and outdoor recreation. Because now, in addition to some of these other activities that I mentioned, we also boast world-class mountain biking, road biking, windsurfers and kiteboarders now fill the Columbia on those days that the rest of us used to curse because it was too windy to water ski or do anything productive. And on calm days, paddleboarders are now literally jamming the river from shore to shore. So our area is actually ground zero for outdoor rec in the state of Oregon. It really has changed the economy in our area. We really don't have shoulder seasons in our businesses anymore. When you couple this with a burgeoning wine industry and brew pub culture, our town is filled with tourists and recreators throughout the year. We've really created a sustainable business environment that is succeeding and raising standards of living for residents throughout our region. But we're not alone, and I'm sure obviously most of you are focused on Bend and Central Oregon and the huge amount of emphasis on outdoor recreation that's occurred there. But it's even getting into mainstream public education now. The OSU Cascades campus that's growing and expanding in Bend is now going to be able to offer major degree majors in outdoor recreation product design and marketing. That just shows you how far we've come in just such a short bit of time. I've also had the opportunity to serve on a Travel Oregon task force over the interim called Outdoor Recreation Means Business. And it does mean business in every sense of the world, because outdoor recreation now is literally a $12 billion a year contributor to the state of Oregon. What we're focusing on in this task force is what we can do to maintain our progress and how we can help other parts of the state share in the economic potential that some regions have. But because of lack of infrastructure, they just aren't able to have facilities available for tourism. So there's a huge amount of potential going on. There's a huge amount of emphasis on this. And what this bill is all about doing, in short, Mr. Chair, is just simply declaring that the first Saturday in June will become Outdoor Recreation Day in the state of Oregon. Just a time for us to come together as a state. Hopefully by then we've got reliably nice weather where folks can get outside and recreate and not be walking in mud. But regardless, this is what it's all about, because I really think that we've gotten to where we are as a state regarding outdoor recreation largely because of good looks. You know, we've got a state that just has got tons of resources, and things have happened pretty much, I think, organically. To go to the next level, or to keep to expand this burgeoning business, I think we need to be more intentional about it. And this is a first step in that. I have another bill that will take it to another level, but that's a bill in another committee. But with that, I would just encourage your support. The bill came out of the committee in the House unanimously and had the same vote on the floor of the House, and would look forward to seeing similar support here in the Senate. So appreciate your time.
Thank you, Rep. Johnson. Are there any questions?
And did I mention? I did mention it's the first Saturday in June, right?
Yes,
well,
there you go.
Rep. Johnson, I was going to ask if we might amend that in this committee to the first week in June, so we can take it off.
I would let you take that up with your Senate President.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We'll recess House Bill 2143A, and we will jump into open a public hearing on House Bill 2179A. Representative Stark. Representative Levy, are you okay with that?
No, I'm fine.
All right, thank you.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Dwayne Stark, State Representative, House District 4 in Southern Oregon. And to make sure I understand the order, Mr. Chair, are we going to have me testify and then you'll recess and then come back to it later?
Right.
All right. So yes. I hear in a moment. So you'll hear from others in just a little while. And I want to have a little disclaimer. If you guys stay away from the puns with this bill, I will attempt to stay away from the puns with this bill. I discovered on the House side that in committee we weren't quite as mature as I think as you all might be able to be. So this bill is about biosolids and human septage. This is not about if we are allowed to treat and apply this. That's already all been worked out with DEQ and all of our current laws and regulations. This is about the manner in where or when we treat and apply. So right now, if you are reclaiming water, and you'll hear a story from Jackson County here in a couple moments, but there's a couple options. So if you go out and let's say you drain someone's septic tank, you have a couple options before you choose to go spread that at a DEQ-approved site. Before you go out and spread it, well, it has to be treated. You have the option of, one, you can take it back and put it in this big container in some big facility and treat it there. Or you can get really hands-on and actually physically stick your hands in it and treat it as it's as you are collecting it. But different counties interpret the next part, the next option differently. Some counties interpret the statute about whether you can or cannot take it out of a septic tank or whatever, wherever you're reclaiming from it, put it in one big tank that is portable, then go to the location you're going to apply it and treat it right there on location before you're applying it. That is what we want to be allowed. That is what some counties allow. And we want to make that clear that as a state, we say, yes, you can do that for the state. I can get into all the reasons why that's good. It's good to not have to build a whole bunch of facilities in different locations. It's good to not have to have someone physically in this and rather be, or multiple spots where you collect this one, treat it as you take it out and put it in this spot, collect this one, treat it, set it in this spot. Instead, collect it together, take it where it's going, treat it, nice and simple. So I can answer questions at this point. I do want to highlight, Mr. Honeycutt can share with you in a little while, we do have a -3 amendment. I'm not a big fan of sending things to the Senate to be fixed. That's not what happened here. Minutes after we passed this unanimously on the House floor, I received a note from a lobbyist, Mr. Honeycutt, that he had just received a call from DEQ that they were requesting a slight modification in some terminology in it. And so this -3 is at their request. At this point, I will take questions or allow you to move on.
Any questions?
You know, we got to fix a lot of things out of the house. Nothing.
A little humor, just a little humor.
Well, a little humor. Okay. And we will recess House Bill 2179A, and we will open a public hearing on House Bill 2405. Representative Lively. Nice tie.
Thank you. Depending on the mood, I point at the tie. Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair, members of the committee. My name is John Lively. I'm from House District 12, which is the city of Springfield. I bring to you House Bill 2405, a very simple but important measure. I just want to say I think we've done a great job in our state, along with our communities, in that recognizing our veterans individually and our veterans collectively on the contribution that they've made to both our country and our state. And this is just another opportunity to make sure another group of veterans gets recognized when the tribe applied for grants that are available through the Parks Department, discovered that the legislation has it read before, talked about regional or local governments or other state agencies are eligible for veteran and war memorial grants, which means the tribes weren't mentioned. So this bill just simply adds tribal in two different places in the act to make sure that the tribal governments are also eligible to apply for these grants. The grants do require matching funds, which the tribes had available. So I'm just here to encourage you to support, to give them the opportunity that the rest of the veterans organizations have in our state.
Are there any questions?
No.
Oh, it's an easy day. Okay, we'll recess House Bill 2405. We'll go back to the top of our schedule, and we will do House Bill 2143A. I'll reopen that for a public hearing. And we have Jim Gardner.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jim Gardner, and I'm appearing today for the Outdoor Industry Association. That is a trade association of companies involved in outdoor recreation that range from large companies like Columbia Sportswear and REI down to mom-and-pop manufacturers, retailers, et cetera. We're very much in support of this bill, and just wanted to highlight some information that is on OLIS in a flyer that our industry has submitted. In Oregon, this industry accounts for $12.8 billion in consumer spending annually. It is responsible for the generation of 141,000 direct Oregon jobs, paying $4 billion a year in wages and salaries, and generating $955 million in state and local tax. So anything that we can do to encourage the growth of this will pay dividends to the state in many ways. We'd urge a aye vote on the bill.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions? Thank you very much. Would anyone else like to testify on House Bill 2143A? We'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2143A, and I'll give my job back to the boss.
Thank you, Vice Chair. Okay, so I'm going to reopen
Yes.
House Bill, the public hearing on House Bill 2748. And we should have Angela Crowley-Cook and Tracy Rutten and Alex Kyler. You want to start in?
Sure. Chair Dembro, members of the committee, Angela Crowley-Cook, Legislative Director of Oregon Environmental Council. We support HB 2748A. We served on the 22-member Wood Smoke Work Group convened in response to legislation in 2015. And the work group really delved deeply into the health concerns of wood smoke pollution. And the members of the public that we heard from were quite concerned about health impacts. But there are really impressive local efforts going on to address wood smoke. One great example was the city of Pendleton. They surveyed their residents and found 800 uncertified wood stoves, and that a third of the survey respondents actually experienced health problems from those wood stoves. So from a combination of grants, they were able to replace 186 wood stoves, and even had a middle school education program about wood smoke. That's just one example of some great community action that can be taken on wood smoke, and that's why we support this bill to increase funding to go towards this effort. Thanks very much.
Good afternoon, Chair Dembro, members of the committee. For the record, Tracy Rutten with League of Oregon Cities. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today in support of House Bill 2748. And thank you, Senator Przanski, for your introduction of the -A4 amendments. We have been engaged in this issue as it really does have a significant impact for a number of our communities, and I won't go into a lot of detail. You heard last week from the mayor of Oak Ridge and some of the efforts that they've made in their community that have been very successful, and we really do believe that both flexibility and local solutions are really critical in addressing the concerns of wood smoke in these communities. We think that this bill more than adequately gives both the flexibility and that local control to make sure that the solutions work for those communities. And we thank you, and happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Chair Dembro, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Alex Kyler. I'm Lane County's Intergovernmental Relations Manager here in support of House Bill 2748A and the -A4 amendments. I'd just like to echo my thanks, Senator Przanski, for helping us get this bill amended on this side. For Lane County, this is a very important issue. You heard previous testimony from Representative Johnson talking about the areas of non-attainment in Oregon being now in Klamath Falls, Oregon, and Oak Ridge, Oregon. Both of those cities actually exist within what's called a metropolitan statistical area, which is a federal construct under the U.S. Census. But when an area is painted as non-attainment, it paints the entire metropolitan statistical area in non-attainment. So if you look at a map of non-attainment counties in Oregon, from the impact of the cities of Oak Ridge and the city of Klamath Falls, both those counties get painted in their entirety. So we've got, the county's got a real justification for trying to ensure that Oak Ridge gets out of that designation and takes us off of that map of attainment areas in Oregon, just as I'm assuming the city of Klamath Falls wants to and the county of Klamath would like as well. Once you get into that non-attainment, you do have some economic development challenges, which Representative Johnson also referred to. So the A4 amendment is simply another allowable use of that fund. It would allow communities to apply for funds, should they exist in the fund, to do community-based programs that would provide either cleaner burning fuels or dry wood. In the city of Oak Ridge, you heard the mayor last week, it's a very important mechanism for their community, particularly in that they have a number of residences that solely heat with wood, and those residents may burn on a air stagnation day, and that becomes a real challenge for the community. Those members of that community in particular find it difficult to comply with the wood stove replacement bill because that, or section of the bill, because that does
require conformity with building codes. Some of these homes, to put in a either weatherize or put in a new wood stove, would cost those residents an enormous amount. So the mayor's incentive to want to just be able to provide them with clean, dry wood. Thank you.
Senator Bridger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You mentioned the study in Pendleton that is quite surprising to me. You said there's over 300 people that had direct health issues because of their wood stoves. Did I catch that right?
Senator Dembrough, Senator Bretschiger, yes, that's correct.
And how do we know that the wood stove was directly, that their health condition was directly attributed to their wood stove?
Senator Dembrough, Senator Bretschiger, it was a survey. It wasn't a scientific study, so it would have been the respondents themselves saying, I have health problems, and I have an old wood smoke stove, and it's probably related. Yeah, it wasn't a scientific study. It was a survey.
It's probably related. We don't know if it is related.
Self-reported, sir.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay.
If you don't mind, a lot of kudos to Senator Przanski for the -4 amendment. Could you guys just explain what it did and how it changed the bill coming over?
Chair Dembrough, Senator Olson. So the bill, as it came over, had an expanded allowable use of the fund to include a rebate program for wood stove replacements. What the -A4 amendment does is provide another allowable use of the fund in Section 6 of the bill, if you amend it, that will allow a community to apply for funds from the DEQ to promote the use of cleaner fuel or dry seasoned wood. So it's just an expansion of the allowable uses of the fund. This was something that we had heard quite a bit on the House side about from the City of Oak Ridge, specifically trying to find other ways to utilize this tool rather than simply the wood stove replacement aspect of that fund.
I'll follow up. And I think I know the answer to this question, but we don't license wood dealers, do we?
Wood dealers?
Yes, someone that sells firewood.
I don't think we do.
I didn't think we did because, you know, we just talked about wet wood. And a lot of people come out there and they say it's seasoned firewood. And when I buy it, I have a moisture meter because I have to have one, and I check it. A lot of times it's not seasoned.
That's right.
And that is a real problem, and I'm glad that you've included it so that we can get drier wood in because it burns a lot better than the wet stuff does.
Yes, sir.
Just wanted to make that point.
Yeah.
Yes, Senator Przanski.
Yeah, and I think that's the important part. By having it here, you're going to give the community such as Oak Ridge this tool, and they've already demonstrated, as the mayor said last week, how they actually are getting the wood. They're making sure it is, in fact,
right
to that, that spec of dryness. Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much. Is there anybody else who wanted to speak on this bill, 2748? Okay, seeing none, I'm going to close the public hearing. We'll wait for Senator Roblin to get back to work the bill, but we will do so. Okay, I'm going to reopen
Yeah.
Just working down the
down
list.
The list.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to reopen the public hearing on House Bill 2179. And so we have Dave Honeycutt, Wayne Buma, and Marianne Nash, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, Dave Honeycutt, Oregonians in Action, here in support of House Bill 2179, and also to ask the committee to look at and work the A3 amendments if the committee chooses to move the bill forward. This is a bill that deals, as Representative Stark has already testified, a bill that deals with the application and on-site treatment of biosolids. The bill started in the House Ag Committee, was approved in that committee on a 9-0 vote, and then went to the House floor and was approved on the House floor with a 56-0 vote. What the bill does, Oregon land use law, in particular ORS 215-213 for Washington and Lane counties, and ORS 215-283 for the other 34 counties, specifies the uses that are allowed on exclusive farm use land. One of the uses that is allowed, subject to a DEQ permit, is the application of biosolids. Unfortunately, while the current statute discusses and approves the application of biosolids, it doesn't discuss the on-site treatment of biosolids. And so what we're trying to do with House Bill 2179 is to allow for temporary on-site treatment of biosolids using portable equipment, essentially small-scale treatment. Mr. Buma, to my left, can tell you exactly how that occurs. It's a very simple process involving water and agricultural lime. It turns the material that comes out of the septic tank from septage, which is what it's called when it's when it comes out of the septic tank, to biosolids, which is what it's called once it's treated with lime and water.
It sounds a lot better.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, we don't, in the real world, we don't call it that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I understand, Mr. Chair and Senator Olson. I appreciate that.
I think the puns are getting ready to start.
Yes. Yes. The A3 amendments were prepared. I got a call or an email actually from Karen Tarno at DEQ on the morning that this bill was scheduled for a vote on the House floor, saying we've got some potential not concerns, but we're not sure that the bill works. The reason for their concern or for the notion that the bill didn't work was just what I told you. We had to add the A3 amendments refer to septage under the existing bill. It only referred to biosolids. Well, there's no on-site treatment of biosolids. It's an on-site treatment of septage, and once it's treated, then it becomes a biosolid. So that's the idea behind the A3 amendments, are to make it clear that what we're treating on-site is septage, and also to ensure that the portable facilities and the temporary treatment, which is all subject to DEQ permitting requirements, that the time for treatment only exists in conjunction with the time for the application of the biosolids under the permit. We get a permit from DEQ to apply the biosolids. It doesn't run indefinitely. You have a season. There's a time limit for you to apply the biosolids. The on-site treatment under the A3 amendments would tie in with that time frame that you would be actually applying the biosolids, just to guarantee that what we're really talking about here is temporary, small-scale, on-site treatment. So with that, I would encourage the committee to move the amendments and move the bill. It's a nice little bill and helps Mr. Buma and others in his position.
Okay. Thanks, Dave. Mr. Buma, welcome.
Thank you. Chair, Vice Chair, Senators. I am a wastewater handler.
Tell them who you are.
And I'm Wayne Buma. I come from Southern Oregon, the Grants Pass, Medford area. But as it stands right now, it's not economically feasible to land apply. And this is what this is kind of about. It's being able to take in septage, filter it, treat it, all on the same property that you're going to land apply the material on. It's extremely beneficial to farmers. And it's beneficial to those wastewater handlers that actually truck it and make that work. Currently, you have to go to facility with the material first, have it filtered and treated, and then you can come back to the land that you're going to apply it on. Well, it becomes very inefficient. And so it doesn't happen like it should be happening as far as this happening on a bigger scale. So this would kind of change that. And so that we can land apply in our area as it should be, and done in a beneficial and cost-effective manner.
Sounds logical. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yes, Marianne.
Yes, Chair Dembrough, members of the committee, Marianne Nash here today on behalf of the Oregon Farm Bureau. I think we found the only cool spot in the entire Capitol today, so I might just live here for the rest of the committee. I'm here today for Farm Bureau supports the application of biosolids at agronomic rates. And when this bill came up on the House side, I answered some questions around what that looked like. But suffice it to say, the DEQ permit has a very robust process for making sure that land applications of biosolids are being done in a way that is environmentally responsible at agronomic rates, appropriate for the crop type that's being produced. So all that is to say, I think we definitely want to make this economical for folks. We have a lot of farmers that utilize biosolids and think it's a real benefit to their operations, and we'd love to see that continue. So thank you.
Thank you. Colleagues, any questions of the panel?
I have one, but...
But?
Well, let's not get into the butt of these jokes.
The one thing I was just thinking about, and I suppose, and I think you answered my question, because I think the farmer would be the guy that would go ballistic. If you had an unscrupulous person that went out there and didn't do the process and just spread the material, I guess the farmer would just go nuts, wouldn't he?
And that's correct.
Probably put that guy out of business?
Yeah. Okay. It wouldn't happen. This is all permitted. This is all through the DEQ. Before you can even land apply, this has all got to be forward in front of DEQ. You gotta get it all approved through them, as well as a LUX, which is a land use compatibility statement, saying that you can apply it on this said property. So you're going through a whole, we're not going around any of that whatsoever. It's got to go through all these different channels first and get okayed. Then you can go ahead and go. So you can't just go to somebody. I couldn't just take this to Joe Blow Farmer and just decide to start doing on his property. Everybody goes, whoa, this just isn't working. Mm-hmm. It would never happen.
I guess my question was the fact that perhaps they wouldn't go through the entire process using the water and the agricultural lime to save some money on their part. The farmer would go nuts.
Yes, yeah, because okay. Because the lime neutralizes. It brings it from about a 7 to a 12. And you got to leave that for 30 minutes. So there's no odor, and it neutralizes. It makes a base out of it instead of slightly acidic.
Right.
And that's where you get the smells. It kills it to where there's none of that. So he wouldn't want that either, nor would a neighbor.
Right.
So when you actually land apply it, it's interesting. Is I'm land applying next to a neighbor, and he goes, well, I don't know if we want you doing this here. I said, it's been happening for months now. He didn't even know. Right across the fence, it's happening. So if it's done correctly, there's no smell problem. There's no, it's just extremely beneficial. It's the right way to do it.
And follow up, and if you didn't do the application with the lime in the water, you would know it.
Oh, you would know it. Okay. There's no doubt you would know it.
The news. Yeah. Thank you very much, Mr.
Thank you.
This seems very logical. Is this typical practice in other states?
Yes, it is.
Like a no-brainer.
It is. In other states, they can treat it where they're land applying it, and that's what's the difference with us versus them. Mm-hmm. And now this would release that so we can be economical and do it correctly. Yeah.
And Chair Denver, just a matter of interest, I found a really neat document from 2002 where DEQ was kind of walking through this process. And I think even at that time, DEQ was envisioning that's how it would occur. So I think it's maybe a nuance of Oregon land use law that came to light. And just needs a tweak to make sure that folks can do it, I think, as everybody was intending when the program was created.
Or never stopping me from giving a little jab to DEQ, perhaps it was 15 years they finally found the paperwork.
Thank you, all three of you. We'll schedule this for a work session soon.
Thank you.
With that, I will close our public hearing on House Bill 2179A.
No amendments.
I don't think so.
Not for this one.
And I'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2405. And Bruce Irwin, you want to come up? Have you already described this bill?
No.
Could
I bring it to my address?
Oh, okay.
We kind of flew through them. We didn't.
Welcome, Mr. Irwin.
Good afternoon. I haven't done this in a long time. My name is Bruce Irwin. I'm a resident of Madras, Oregon, and I work for the Warm Springs Tribes as a development director the last 2 years. I have a 33-year career in Parks and Recreation Management Administration, the last 18 as an administrator level, and I've enjoyed my success as a Parks and Recreation person. When I first got to Warm Springs Tribes, I asked, where's your comprehensive plan? What grants have you gotten recently? And can I ask those questions as a new person on board, you know, that's charged with the responsibility of helping to get funding to help with recreation facilities and other projects? And I find out that in 1976, the Warm Springs Tribes got a grant for about $40,000 to do phase one of a ball field project, which was successful. And then in 1978, they got about $100,000 under, at that time, the Land and Water Conservation Program, which started in 1964. And those were the last two grants the tribe applied for and got more than 43 years ago. So it's time. So I'm rolling up my sleeves. Okay, where are we eligible? So I go look at the comp plan, the inventories. We have 10 parks, 10 recreation areas, and we own 50% of the shoreline at Lake Billy Chinook. Pretty incredible. Got a lot of mileage of a big fishery lake, very popular lake. I find out in my research that there's only three of the Oregon Parks and Recreation Department programs whereby the Indian tribes have eligibility to even apply, let alone compete. So I was kind of bothered by that. Now I'm charged with responsibility to go after money to help the tribes, you know, upgrade their facilities, and they haven't been touched in more than 40 years. And so there's interest amongst the tribe to go after that. So I wrote a letter to my bosses at the tribe and say, you know, can we pester the State Parks and Recreation Commission about maybe changing some rules and allowing the tribes to be eligible. All nine tribes in Oregon that are fairly recognized, let them compete with the cities, the counties, the special districts. And my thought is, may the best project win or score better than the other one. But we can't do it if we're not eligible. So, and then there's a veterans project that's been hanging on for 19 years at Warm Springs Tribes. And there was some conflict amongst the four different veterans group, and the project never happened. In February, I kind of brought them all together at the same table, and we've agreed to go forward, and we're marching forward on a project, and we're going after some money through the Grand Ronde Tribe, through the Spirit Mountain Community Fund. I just finished a grant and submitted it yesterday for $131,000, which is a great start. And the tribe has $31,000 of its own money. The State Parks has a program for veterans memorials, but they have to go through the county. So the county would be like an agent over the tribe, and we have to go get permission from them to apply. So I think that's what the primary bill is taking. It says allow the tribes to go it alone, compete on their own without having to go through their county jurisdiction and getting permission and having, you know, all the resolutions done, and let us go it by ourselves. So I urge passage of 2405 to allow all nine tribes in Oregon to be eligible to compete with the bigger agencies. And, you know, we're the biggest tribe in Oregon with 644,000 acres, and there's about 4,500 tribal members. And it's hard to compete with a city of 200,000 people when you have to come up with a 50-50 match. And so I proposed to other people, Senator Lively, or Representative Lively, that, you know, maybe a 20-80 mix, because all the counties that have a population of under 30,000 are only required to come up with a 20% match on a major project. And I see the ball fields there at the Little League ball fields at the tribe. I go home every night and you see them flooded with kids playing. Hey, they're all hopeful of being the next Jacoby Ellsbury, who's the center fielder for the Yankees today, and making a big wad of money. So with that, any questions? I think it's important that...
Yeah. So basically, Mr. Owen, this bill is just adding tribal governments to those other governments that can apply.
Exactly.
Yeah. Any questions, colleagues? Sounds good.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Anybody else want to testify on this bill?
I don't think so.
Okay.
This seems
right. All right. We'll get this scheduled for a work session soon. I'll close this public hearing on House Bill 2405 and open a public hearing on, reopen the public hearing on HCR 8. Mm-hmm. And Angela Crowley Cook, come on back. Anybody else want to testify on this? This is the Beach Bill.
Just are me. You cherry picking the good bills?
Maybe.
Chair Dumbro, members of the committee, Angela Crowley Cook, Legislative Director at Oregon Environmental Council. I usually skip reading our mission, but this is an important bill, and so I'm going to read it this time. OEC was founded in 1968. We're a nonprofit, nonpartisan, membership-based organization. We advance innovative, collaborative, and equitable solutions for Oregon's environmental challenges for today and future generations. And the reason why I'm here is because we enthusiastically endorse and support this resolution celebrating the 50th anniversary. It's tied to our history. We want to thank Senator Roblin and Representatives Gomberg, Brock Smith, Boone, and McEwen for their recognition of this important commitment to the free and uninterrupted use of Oregon's world-famous beaches for everyone. So our close connection with this anniversary is that our first president, Meridel Gale, was a coordinator for Beaches Forever, the group that elevated awareness about threats to public access to Oregon's beaches, and successfully advocated for the Beach Bill. A year after the Beach Bill was passed, the Oregon Environmental Council was established, and working to find a solution to ensuring public access to Oregon's beaches provided the model for our collaborative, bipartisan approach that we continue to follow today. The Beach Bill should also be celebrated because it set the stage for other important actions. It resonated because it stood for public access, but also because it showed the value of Oregonians speaking out. And people who cared about Oregon began to show up in record numbers in Salem, calling for environmental protections such as the bottle bill, the billboard removal bill, pollution controls to cars, and using a percentage of highway funding for bike and recreational trails. So we join you in celebrating the 50th anniversary of the Beach Bill and look forward to working with you on all of our other environmental issues before this committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Angela. Any questions? Okay, thank you. So with that, I will close our public hearing on HCR 8. We'll get this scheduled for next week. And that's it for our public hearings, mm-hmm. Yes. So we'll go through our work sessions and maybe we'll be able to allow Senator Roblin to vote, unless someone wants to vote for him. Mm-hmm. But probably we shouldn't do that.
He'll be excused, though.
Yeah. Okay, so let's start with House Bill 2748, since that's freshest on our minds. I'll open a work session on House Bill 2748A. Vice Chair Olson.
Chair Dumbro, I move to adopt the -4A4 amendment stated 42617.
Vice Chair Olson has moved to adopt the -4 amendment stated April 26, 2017. Any discussion? Any objection? Okay, these amendments are adopted.
Chair Dumbro, I move House Bill 2748A as amended to the floor with a D-pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Olson moves House Bill 2748A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Is there any objection to the motion? Seeing none, so ordered. Motion passes. Senator Przanski, you want to carry?
I'd be glad to. Thank you.
Great. Okay. So I'll close our public hearing on House Bill, our work session on House Bill 2748. And open our work session on House Bill 2331. And this is the compressed natural gas one.
Chair Dumbro, I move House Bill 2331 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Olson has moved House Bill 2331 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, motion carries. We'll go to the floor.
Okay.
Vice Chair. Great. Vice Chair Olson will carry. I'll close our work session on House Bill 2331 and open our final work session, that is House Bill 2566. And this is the youth Hunter Mentor Program.
Chair Dumbro, I move House Bill 2566A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Olson has moved House Bill 2566A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. Motion carries. This bill will go to the floor.
Carry it.
And before I could designate Senator Bearsugar, he stepped up to the plate. With that, I will close our work session on House Bill 2566A. Unless anyone has anything else they want to bring up, we will be adjourned until tomorrow.